when you see entrepreneurs, and people always see these successful entrepreneurs, but what they don't see is the failures that they went through. And everyone goes through failures. Like, it's in every business, there's going to be failures. I think the key thing for successful entrepreneurs are the ones that can get past those and can stay positive.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Hustle Harder, a podcast that gives a no-bullshit approach to startups in the creative industries. We interview creatives while discussing the challenges and failures that come along with the day-to-day grind. Today, we're interviewing Dan Beach, the co-founder and CEO of Socialite Vodka. Socialite Vodka is the first ever ready-to-drink sparkling vodka cocktail that has no sugar, no sweetener, and no artificial ingredients. Thanks for chatting with us today, Dan.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
We'd like to take a minute to thank our sponsor, WeCreate, for producing this wonderful music that you're listening to right now. Just so you know, WeCreate is spelt with a K and a 3 just to make things a little more tricky for you. Go check them out now. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so I'm one of the three co-founders of Socialite. The reality is this drink started in our kitchen. Like, we were looking for a drink that we could drink all night and get up in the morning. And what was really frustrating 5 years ago when we started the idea was that every pre-mixed drink has so much sugar in it. I mean, most coolers or traditional coolers have 6 to 10 sugar cubes. So when you have a night out with those, you feel terrible in the morning. So we started naturally drinking vodka sodas. And I remember we asked ourselves a question one day, is like, why is no one making a pre-mixed vodka soda? Like, it just doesn't make sense to us. So we started asking a lot of questions. We started talking to people in the industry, and we kept getting the same feedback over and over again. Like, it's actually a pretty good idea. So we went out, got a loan, we produced it. It's a little more challenging than that, but we came up with the concept, we developed it, and we got it out in the market. And now it's taken off, and so we're pretty excited about what we're doing.
Yeah, not gonna lie, Socialite is actually one of my favorite drinks. Yes.
Thank you,
Sam. Because like, I'm a person who actually does not like sugar in my drinks, and like just like drinking that, I just feel like, I don't know, it's kind of refreshing, which is like a bad thing too, because like you down like three of them and you're just like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But in the morning, I feel fine, you know, no hangover.
And that's where we came from. Like, we. When you make drinks for yourself, I mean, or at least what we were doing is you just have good ingredients. So you go in and get a bottle of vodka, you get soda water, you get fruits, like very refreshing fruits. And when you mix it together, it's something that you can enjoy. And that's what we recreated. It's a delicious tasting, simple drink that just happens to be low calorie, that just happens to be gluten free. But that's the whole concept. We wanted something very refreshing and fun. And social.
Yeah. Well, I think you accomplished that.
Thank you.
So going back to when you started it in your kitchen.
Yeah.
So when you were first crafting those few flavors, like, what did that entail? Or like, how did you guys start experimenting?
So we knew that we wanted to make a vodka soda, but we also knew we wanted to make it kind of crafty. So the way we actually started is, and this is no word of a lie, we came up with all these concepts. And we actually invited all our friends to our kitchen, and we would get them to try all the flavors. Maybe we made it a little unfun for them, but basically we had these sheets where we were like, which ones do you guys like? Like, write all details. And we wouldn't even let them talk to each other. We'd be like, write down which one is your favorite. And so we got all our friends to fill out all this paperwork. So they thought they were coming over for a party to try all these flavors. And we were like very regimented in like, no, don't talk to each other. Don't look at each other. Like, write down. Once you finish, then you can drink the rest of that. But I think it was good because it gave us insight into what everyday normal people are looking for. And that's kind of where we started. And it helped us get to a place of like, well, yeah, this drink is probably the best. The funny thing is, to this day, our friends still think they own the recipe to our drink. So, but it was a nice way to get them on board early on. And then from there, we took it from concept in our kitchen where we had ideas of what should be going into it. And we worked with a food and beverage company to take it to the next level where, in Canada, it's illegal to produce drinks in your kitchen, especially alcoholic. So we then had to work with a proper facility and do it properly.
Mm-hmm. So what was the process like getting into the LCBO?
It was a challenge. So the first year that we applied to the LCBO, we applied on a concept. And we had some samples made and they liked it. The problem is we were so far off the norm that we actually got rejected the first year. So LCBO takes product once a year. Process starts in August, and they try the drink. They really liked it, but they were just like, listen, it's the concept is so far off and you guys have no sales. Which was, now looking back on it, we get it. So we didn't get into Ontario. So we decided to go to Alberta, which is an open market. And I think there's somewhere between 1,200 and 1,400 liquor stores there. So we were working day jobs at the time. We'd produced 10,000 cases, like 5,000 cases of each flavor. And we literally would come home from work every day and we would spend 2-3 hours on the phone calling every liquor store in Alberta just to be like, hey, this is our drink. Do you want to try it? Like, and we got enough people saying, yeah, all right, okay. Yeah, all right, fine. And it's funny because we would see our weekly sales. And I think the first week we sold 14 cases. So we all had a little bit of a panic. Next week was something like 25. And then it just started steamrolling. And so it got to the point where we're happy we did that. I mean, obviously scary at first, but very, very happy we did it.
Definitely. So when you were on the phone with all these people, I mean, that's a lot of energy to be putting in, like 2 hours, like just straight up pitching. How did you keep motivated during that process?
I suppose when you've put in your own money to produce 10,000 cases, that's a good enough. it's a good enough motivator. Plus, the reality is was most of the conversations were pretty positive.
Yeah.
You'd always get someone saying like no, and it's probably they were having a bad day. But we also support each other as a team, and just we would have ongoing conversations about how it was going. And I guess we'd all committed to ourselves to do this, and so. Mm-hmm. I guess we'd agree whatever it took, we would do it. It's a hard place to start with. And I think that's the thing with being an entrepreneur, is it's good to be in a place of discomfort, and to be able to push yourself beyond it. Cause then it feels good when you're successful.
So were you afraid to take the leap?
Yeah.
On that note?
I mean, when we originally got a loan from BDC, going into that meeting was scary because we just went in on a concept. Mm-hmm. And when we got our first loan, I remember walking out and turning to Kevin and my business partner and being like, listen, I think we're going to do this now. Like we've got the money, or at least we have some of the money. We have a good idea. We've got good feedback from people. And I think you never know until you do it. Mm-hmm. But that's the nice thing about living in Canada, is you have those opportunities to try things. There was always the chance that it all failed and then we went bankrupt. But I think for us, it was just, you got to try. You have to try. So.
Mm-hmm. And do you think like the biggest leap for like entrepreneurs is just like, given the fact that they have to invest their own money and kind of like risk the fact that they would go bankrupt? Do you think like that is like the biggest leap entrepreneurs have to face?
Yeah, I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. That's definitely something. You have to believe in your product, first of all. You have to have a good product. You have to believe in it. I mean, you should have some data to back up that consumers want it, or mm-hmm. that there is a market for it, or that you can get to a place of sustainability. You have to plan for it. But yeah, there's always a leap of faith in whatever you do. But I suppose even if you have a day job or a professional job, there's always a leap of faith in life. And so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, for us it was a leap of faith, but with the knowledge of knowing that this is something I like, this is something my friends like, and there's nothing like it available. So mm-hmm. I think you have to believe and you have to take that leap of faith, but you have to have a level of certainty, I suppose. Yeah.
So on that note, what's one of the main strains that you feel in entrepreneurship?
I think one of the main strengths that we talk about a lot is the idea of things won't always go well. And when they don't go well, or when there's challenges, you have to be able to rise beyond that. And you have to have a strong team around you. You have to have people that balance you out, so that when you have those rough days, or when things don't go well, or when something catastrophic happens, you have to have the mental fortitude, or you have to be able to work as a team to get past that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I remember, so one of our first interviews that we did, we interviewed this serial entrepreneur, and one of the things that he said is the entrepreneur's job is to get back up. And I think that mm-hmm. really resonated with all of us, especially as we've had our fair share of failures. And I think every entrepreneur that we talk to, it's really interesting because the meaning of failure is never negative. It's always a learning experience. But I feel like people who maybe haven't taken the leap have an entirely different, I don't know if it's fear, but connotation to the word failure. And I think that's something that really needs to be changed.
Mm-hmm. I think failure is like you only ever really fail if you don't learn the lessons from the mistakes that you made.
Yes.
If you can't see those, then that's failure.
Yeah, and I think failure is such a strong word too. Like you can have challenges, but it is a really good learning experience. To your point, mm-hmm. It's like if that happens, you just have to make sure it will never happen again. And when it does happen, the best thing you can do is just minimize the impact, kind of face it, and then go on and make sure you put steps in place or whatever it may be to make sure it doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember the first samples we ever had produced weren't properly capped. So we ended up with a product that was flat. And it's hard to go into a store and sell a product that's like a flat water just doesn't taste good. And at the time it was incredibly frustrating, but you kind of get over it and you move on.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that's like one of your biggest failures?
No, I wouldn't even call that a failure. I think I would have called that just a roadblock or a frustration or it's part of the process. Mm-hmm. And part of it was our own fault that we didn't know enough about making samples and we should have been there on production day. We should have been overseeing it. But now that will never happen again. And now we also make sure that we partner with people who get what we're doing and who allow us to be there for the QA process and to oversee what is very, very important to us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've had failures. We've just had challenges along the way.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to look at it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Failure, sometimes people be like, oh, damn it, I failed. You know, and they kind of like bring themselves down. But like, I think like thinking of it as challenges kind of like drives a person more to like,
Just like life or relationships. You're never going to have perfect days every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a rougher patch, you just have to work at it and it gets better. And I think you enjoy the upside more when you do have those challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's very few businesses that start and just become instant successes without hard work and challenges and having to beg, borrow, and steal or ask family for something or ask someone for something. It's just, these things just take time.
And I think that when it takes time and you've had those challenges, it helps set you up for success in the long run instead of just instant success and then you not really knowing what to do when you hit these challenges. It sort of prepares you more.
Going back to your process, like I want to know the creative process behind like creating the image or the brand or like the colors of Socialite Vodka.
Originally we wanted to, so the name Socialite, so social comes from the idea of we made it for friends and family and we wanted people to be able to be social, because that's really where the idea came from. My business partner, Nitu, who used to be a director of marketing at Pepsi, when we convinced her to come on board, she was like, I love the name social, but she's like, why don't you add social light or light for the lighter attributes of the drink? And then it could be a play on words called Socialites. So we're like, oh yeah, we like that. And the reality is the whole process is an iteration. It's not like we woke up one day and we're like, got it, Socialite, it's done. It's going to be a black can with light, like vibrant colors. It was just like one thing after another. Like we worked with one designer, Kevin had met at a wedding and she was like, yeah, I do this stuff for a living. Like I can help you guys out. And so she came to us and she's like, it'd be cool to have a black can with vibrant colors. And we're like, all right, yeah, not a bad idea. Like let's look at blue, let's look at red, let's look at white. And we went through like 25, 30 iterations. And they were like, well, why don't we look at black? And we saw black. We're like, that's it. Like, that's what we want. And she was almost like, idiots. Like, but the nice thing was, it's like we had an expert at the table who kind of gave us direction. And we got to see all the other opportunities or the other options. And we were happy with what we've done. But right now, I think we're on to our fourth or fifth iteration on the can. So we're always learning on how we can make it better. And we really, really listen to what consumers say. And at the beginning, part of the comments were that it could be more exciting. And so that's why we added the bubbles on the side. And someone else told us we can make it pop out by putting the white ring around. So we're learning as we go.
Mm-hmm.
So
Well, I think that's good to always just constantly be changing it and updating it and mm-hmm. innovating it, because I think that's what will help it stay relevant anyways.
Yeah, and innovation is key, especially in our business where there's people are always looking for the next thing. So we are always innovating. We're always looking at what can come next. And the other thing we do is we always make sure that we listen to consumers. We always try and listen to what consumers are looking for. We purposely do our own tastings in a lot of cases, which can be difficult. I mean, sitting or standing for 4 hours, getting people to sample a product when it's like a Friday afternoon and all they want to do is get home can be challenging, but you get the most honest responses from people and you get people telling you exactly what they're thinking. And we're always noting that down, and we're always taking inventory of what we're hearing so that we can make our next product even better.
Do you ever have customers suggest flavors?
Oh yeah. Oh, all the time. And that's why, like, the grapefruit pomelo, the one that's coming out now, we just kept hearing over and over, like, grapefruit. So we're always listening. We're always taking notes. There's only been one time where I probably wouldn't have followed the advice. We met a woman at a show, and she was like, "I love your product. You guys should do a," she said, onion and garlic.
What?
And, I was kind of confused. I was like as a martini. And she's like, no, like a vodka soda. I was like, that's one I just do not see working. we're always innovating, and we always have ideas for a year down the line, 2 years down the line. I mean, it's important to always continue to make new products.
Yeah. Is there a drink that's onion and garlic, or was she just like thinking of like onion and garlic chips?
That's what I was
never
thinking.
Heard of a drink that's onion and garlic.
Yeah.
I mean, with martinis, you can get a little
True.
More savory.
Okay.
Like you would use olive juice, like a dirty martinis with olive juice, but it's a long way to go.
Yeah,
you know
a
what?
Bit of a stretch.
It may actually be delicious. We probably should have tried it, but for us, we really want to stay with very, very refreshing products that people get.
What would your breath smell like after drinking that?
Yeah, that's like the
There's
two worst.
There's only one
missions.
Way to find out.
And then also, how do you combine some of your flavors? Because I know you have like the lime and ginger, and then you have the mango and pineapple. How do you choose like what flavors to combine and what?
It's a long process. Okay. It's a long process. Part of it is we always start with concepts of what we want to do, and the reality is until you try it, you don't know. Mm-hmm. And so we like with the pineapple mango, we were trying a pineapple one and we were trying a mango, and they were both pretty good. And then we're like, well, why don't we try them together and see what happens? And it was like, yes, that's it. I mean, the lime and ginger, we were doing a traditional vodka soda with lime. And we're like, well, why don't we spice it up a little bit? That's where we threw the ginger in. The lemon cure mint, I was actually working in my office before as we were coming up with the concept. Mm. And a girl in my office is doing a cleanse, and she had lemon cure mint water. I was like, wow, what is that? Let me try that out. And that's how we came up with that one. Pineapple mango was just, yeah, we were playing with two flavors. And then grapefruit, we just got so many requests for grapefruits drinks. And so we, as we developed it, that one just came together really well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So on that note, what would you say, or how would you say that creativity impacts your day-to-day processes with coming up with new flavors and even when you're distributing it and marketing your drinks?
Yeah, I mean, as a small company, it's important to be creative in everything we do. There's no formula that you can follow. I mean, there's for developing drinks, it is a scientific process, but it does take some creativity. Mm-hmm. With marketing, we don't have the same budget that larger companies would have. Like my business partner used to be a direct marketing at Pepsi, and we always joke about how we took her budget at Pepsi and we took away two or three zeros from her. And so then you have to find creative ways to get to the same solution.
Mm-hmm.
And in everything we do, we approach partnerships the same way. I mean, there's no way we can go pitch to a large partner and say, like, we're going to give you $10 million in sponsorship. But there are other things we can do for you. And there's ways to get to a good partnership without having the money involved that could limit us. So yeah, I think there's always a level of working outside the box.
Yeah.
So.
I think that's common amongst pretty much every startup. When you're bootstrapping, definitely have to make sure that your resources are being put in creative ways absolutely. Or stretched or whatever.
Yeah, stretch. I mean, you look at, you only have a finite amount of money for your budget or for marketing or for everything. And so, yeah, you want to stretch that as far as you can. And when you look at one thing that's to do is $10 million and something else is $500, you're like, well, I can do more of the $500. I just have to make sure that there's a return on my investment. Mm-hmm. And so...
So with the risk that you guys take, especially, you know, with taking the leap and using potentially going bankrupt and all that. Yeah, so I had to. What is your definition of success?
Oh, that's a good question. I think definition of success, I think, is a few things. I mean, one of the things is personal happiness and getting to a point where we're happy with what we're doing and we're having a good time doing it. And I think that's obviously one of the aspects of it. Another side of success is hearing people tell us that they like our product. To me, every time I hear someone say, this is my drink, this is my favorite drink, thank you for doing it, to me, that's success. I think you always have to separate out the financial side of it and kind of making money out of something it's nice. But I think I think it comes down to satisfaction. That's personal satisfaction is where I personally get success from is just hearing people say, like, I like your product. I like what you guys are doing. Continue to do what you're doing. And so it's a very nice compliment to hear, but to me that's success. Mm-hmm.
The money is just the bonus.
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, you have to, as an entrepreneur, you have to love what you're doing. And you have to be willing to do it even if you made no money out of it. And I think that's the way that we always looked at it, that if I had the choice to do anything in the world, this is what I'd be doing. Because I wake up every day, I love what I do. I started the business with one of my best friends. My other business partner is now one of my good friends. So it's fun to work every day. And we work long hours, but every day is something different. And it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
So at Origins Meg, we have a tagline called Be the Now, and we just want to know what that means to you.
For me, it would be living in the moment and doing what you want to do and kind of living every day to its fullest, whatever that means to you. And I think for everyone, it's very different, but I think it's living in the moment.
Well, thank you for joining us today. It was great chatting with you.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the time and enjoy the drinks.
Thank you. We will.
Thank you.